Holy shit, we've got a big show for you tonight. Welcome in to Redacted on this Taco Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And yes, we have a jam-packed show for you on this Tuesday edition of Redacted. Welcome to the show. On this show, we try to cover the stories the mainstream media is largely ignoring, or we try to cut through the spin of what they're trying to share. We try to seek the truth on this show. And so we're going to talk about the economic freefall. I mean, it's not just Europe, it's the United States. It is widespread panic this afternoon after Russia decided to shut down the Nord Stream pipeline. But it wasn't just that. It was the Turk pipeline as well, the Turk Stream pipeline. So we are in absolute chaos. And we're going to dive into all of the different details around this economic freefall this afternoon.
Plus, a major win for President Trump when it comes to his legal battle against the Justice Department. We're going to break that down as well. A lot of surprising little nuggets in there.
Yeah, I would say, and a lot of surprising nuggets from the judge in this thing, too.
Yes.
Like, oh, man, it was kind of sloppy. So we're going to get into some of the judge back and forth.
Sloppy. Hold that. I will ask for qualifiers later.
Okay. Some of it was sloppy. We'll dive into it.
So okay.
We have a lot to talk about.
That's a bomb. Okay.
We're also going to look at Israel. Of course, we really talked about the cover up in Israel last night around and the shit show that Israel is putting on as it related to the vaccine cover up. And adverse effects. Now, tonight, we're going to be looking at a bombshell news story, an update on the assassination of that journalist that happened in Israel. And, Israel has some explaining to do. Anyway, we'll get into all of that.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're also going to talk about Syria, because the United States... Well, I'll throw this out to you. Do you guys think that the United States has any sort of military involvement in Syria? Do they have any active military bases? Do they have anything like that?
I mean, they don't say much, right? Hmm. It's not the popular conflict in the world.
No.
So you wouldn't think.
They don't advertise it. So we'll kind of throw that out to you. But we're going to talk about the latest U.S. goings-on in Syria. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome.
All right. Thank you for joining us. Hey, Quavers in the chat here says, why was I unsubscribed? If that happened to you, make sure that that subscribe button is already grayed out. So it means that you are a subscriber because sometimes YouTube does that. We don't like it. You found us. Thank you for coming here.
Yeah.
And make sure that you find us again every night because we're here every day at 4 p.m. Eastern.
That's right. Live. We are live right now, 4 p.m. Eastern time. David, why did, like, so YouTube, and we're also streaming on Rumble right now, one of our favorite platforms, because they don't censor you. But how does it work where people get unsubscribed on YouTube? How does that work?
Yeah, so supposedly the story is that they do that every month to remove bot accounts. But in that blanket, a lot of real subscribers get removed. So that's what they say they're doing. But like, it's a lot, too. It's hundreds of subscribers every month are removed. So if you see the subscribe button below and it's red, that means you are no longer subscribed. So click it and subscribe.
All right. User All right. Quivers, are you a bot? Probably not.
And Aussie Princess says, am I blocked? No, you're not blocked. And we don't block comments. We don't censor comments. If you say something and it gets censored or blocked, that's because YouTube is up to its games. So that's not what we do. We don't do that here. So please engage with us in our chat. Please subscribe to the channel. We also, I should mention before we get into the news here in a second, we have a daily newsletter. It's totally free. I would encourage all of you to subscribe. I heard a really nice email. I want to call out Dottie. Dottie, you know, she's one of our viewers. She signed up for our newsletter yesterday and says she loves it, and she gets it every morning. She just wanted to say thank you. And it was a very nice email message that she sent us.
The one about the rainbow?
Yes.
So there was this user said specifically it made her think of my rainbow watch because we get a lot of chat about this watch band, which I wear, you know, not in order to put any political belief in anybody's face, just because I really love it. And so many times we get comments are like, oh, her woke watch says it all. This watch is not telling you to believe anything other than the fact that I don't have a stylist and I choose my accessories myself, and I really love rainbows.
Right.
So that's not, really, by the way, that's really, truly it.
When did rainbows become co-opted? I mean, literally, like rainbows? I mean, for crying out loud, you can't. Anyway, it has nothing to do with woke politics, if you like rainbows or not.
But it so literally is not. So okay. My politics are out here on the table. I don't need to subtly convey them to you through my fashion. I will never do that.
David's wearing Black Lives Matter underwear. You can't see it. You can't see it.
Yes. I keep my political beliefs in the dark.
That's right. We're going to shine a light where the sun don't shine.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into it then, shall we? Let's talk about today's top story. And it is a revolt in Europe. I mean, it's going to become a revolt in the United States if the mainstream media will actually cover the story. Something huge happened this week. And the Western governments better start paying attention to the people, because people are pissed. I saw someone in the chat, one of the first comments tonight live in our live show said, what do we do about this? What do we do about these governments? I said, we need to rise up. We need to rise up and throw these bums out. We need to tell them that their politics driving us into the ground is done. And we need to elect new leaders. That's what we need to do. We need to take it to the streets like they just did in Prague this weekend. Now, this is not getting any coverage in the mainstream media, very little. 70,000 people poured into the streets of Prague this weekend to demand a new government. And not just that, demand a new government, and they want a move away from NATO. We don't want to be in NATO. We don't want to have anything to do with NATO and the European Union. They're sick of these woke politicians. They're sick of these policies that are driving them into a cold, dark winter. And they said they also are done. They want neutrality. They do not want them sending billions of dollars to Ukraine. Enough is enough.
This is amazing, because this has been all but absent from Western media.
Yeah. I mean, there's very little coverage of it at all. Now, just think about that, right? Seriously, if 70,000 people just marched on Washington, mm-hmm. right? Wouldn't, I mean, there would be coverage of that.
You would think.
Maybe not, though. Heck, when you had that trucker convoy.
Unless it was also anti-NATO, there would not.
When you had that trucker convoy that rolled into Washington, D.C.,
yes.
there was like zero coverage of it, right? The same stuff that was happening, of course, in Canada started happening in the United States.
Yeah.
No coverage. It got very, very little coverage. Anyway, so 70,000 people poured into the streets of Prague and demand a new government, demand a removal from NATO, demand them to stop sending billions to Ukraine. And the prime minister, Peter Fiala, called them extremists. Called the protesters pro-Russian forces. And I mean, so these people you're seeing in this video here, I mean, these are pro-Russian forces. These are extremists that you're seeing in this video. I mean, are these really the types of people that are, I mean, look fairly peaceful to me. I don't see any violent protests. And so what's amazing is that they labeled them, Reuters labeled them far right wingers.
Okay.
When we know that there were left-wingers and there were right-wingers, and they came together in protest. It wasn't just right-wingers, and it wasn't, and they're not, what are they, pro-Putin apologists? That's what the prime minister...
That's so interesting, right? That people that are called extremists on either side, though, are pro-peace, are anti, like you can be extreme of any kind of politics when mostly the common ground is not killing people.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that you get labeled that way. We saw this with Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
Labeling these people racist, right?
Yes.
The people that the trucker convoy in Canada, they were racist, and he called them
terrorists.
He called them the N-word with an A-Z-I in it. He called them that too. He called them racist. He called them terrorists. And then we saw the same thing last week from President Biden in Philadelphia, giving that crazy speech, talking about basically
extremists.
70 million Republicans are extremists.
Mm-hmm.
People who voted for Trump, like this is the type of rhetoric that this prime minister of the Czech Republic wants to take on. So it wasn't just in the Czech Republic. Then it started spreading to Germany. So these are protests in Germany. This happened in Cologne. This was this weekend. I mean, and look at this. Just look at the tunnel here and the thousands of people pouring through the tunnels saying the same thing. They demand the lifting of sanctions against Russia and neutrality in the conflict in Ukraine.
And they're demanding, right, something that we thought was kind of a given, that your politicians look out for your own country, right, in a way that does not harm the weakest first, right? So there's one thing, like, Trump saying America first, right, tended to be divisive on some level, right? Some people thought, well, saying America first is ethnocentric. But really, this is what everybody wants is look out for the interests of the government in which we pay our taxes, right? Look out for the interests of the people who live here.
Right, the people. Right? I don't give a shit about the government's interests.
Interests of, well, whoever lives within the boundaries and pays taxes and obeys these laws, right?
Right.
Then you should be taking, this is our social contract. You offer us protection.
But it's not, though. This is, in our minds it is, and on this show, if you guys are watching this show, I think you probably think that too. Right. That sovereign, like, okay, I get the idea of sovereignty. You have a government and then that government should care for its people. The same we saw in Serbia when President Vucic, of course, signed an agreement with Vladimir Putin for gas, right? Coming through the fall, right?
So this is a violation of the social contract. What do we say? We pay taxes. We obey the laws you set forth in order to live here. What do you do in exchange? You offer us safety. You look out for our interest, right? We do not pay you taxes for you to look out for Ukraine's interest,
right,
or the United States' interest, or any other interest outside of this borderland so that we can have a country. Otherwise, we should not have a country. You, powerful collective. Well,
they don't want a country. That's my point. Is the right. World Economic Forum, by the way, the World Health Organization, admitting today where they get their money. And so they get 25% from just governments, and the 75% of the other money they get are from like people like Bill Gates. Decentralized. They do not want a government.
Unelected influencers
who are going to tell the Czech Republic that they need to spend billions of dollars in Ukraine. They need to, the list is endless on what they have to do and what they're supposed to be doing because they need to be supporting, you know, I don't know, these woke politics and what's happening with, we're going to shut down nuclear reactors. You're going to all get solar panels when that plan is a total farce.
I mean, it would be fine if politicians then just wouldn't put on the ruse of protecting their people, right? So then they should just go off and join Bill Gates, I was going to say Bill Clinton, but he's in that cabal too, right? They should join the Bills and then raise money privately and then be able to then go and give whatever you want to Ukraine, right? But while you're under the guise of running a government, you need to protect the people who live there and are taxpayers.
Or start your own Epstein Island.
Speaking of Bills, go ahead. I was going to say, speaking of Bills, like in Italy, they're actually burning their utility bills. Like they're like, we're not paying them. And they'd never do that here in the States because we'd probably be arrested. But, you know, I hope more places do stuff like that. Like they don't pay the bill or they protest somehow.
Well, it was happening in the UK, too. Right. There were tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, over a million people saying we're going to like not pay our electric bill. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it was called like Freeze UK. I forget the hashtag or whatever. I know Russell Brand featured it on a show the other day. It was like 1.2 million or someone said, hey, we're not going to pay our electric bills. I mean, and then we're not going to pay our taxes. We're going to not going to pay our taxes. So we're going to talk about the UK in a moment because Liz Truss has an energy plan for the UK and she's the new prime minister this afternoon, shaking hands with the Queen up in Balmoral. Balmoral up in Scotland.
I think
the Queen's
Balmoral. Sure.
Let any Brits in the chat let us know how we say it. But anyway, Europe and the United States are in a free fall. They are heading into an economic catastrophe of their own making. This is their own choice to do this. And renowned economist Noriel Roubini, who predicted the 2008 economic financial crisis, is out with a new prediction today. And it's about the United States. And that all of us should pay attention to this. It's not good. What he's seeing now is a historic crash in the United States. And he squarely points the blame at the Federal Reserve and these politics at the central bank. So here's what Noriel Roubini had to say. You have the worst of the 1970s in terms of supply shocks, he says. You have the worst of the global financial crisis because of too much debt. And that combination is dangerous, he said. If you're behind the curve, eventually the recession is going to be more severe. The loss of jobs and income and wages is going to be more severe. And he points out that the Federal Reserve might have to double interest rates to 5% in order to curb inflation. But here's the rub. Here's the catch-22, because he says any increase like that would destroy the economic growth and cause a massive amount of layoffs. But as we've talked about on this show, employers have already said that they are going to have massive layoffs
And they've begun.
Yeah,
right.
After the new year. Well, some of them have already begun, like Snap, and what was the other big company?
Bed Bath & Beyond.
Bed Bath & Beyond. And there was even another one, too.
Amazon now is closing warehouses that they opened thinking the boom of the pandemic would continue. And now they're like, oh, actually, people aren't buying so many whatever the hell you guys were buying.
I don't know.
Whatever. What was Toilet it paper. You were buying, Clayton? Oh, no, Clayton is always buying strange things on Amazon too, but that has curbed.
Yes.
No, you know there's a recession.
Wow.
I just bought a straw with a filter so I don't have to use coffee things. I can just put my coffee in my cup and drink it through a filtered straw.
So you're not going to be able to get that kind of shit anymore. Like the warehouses are.
What?
Yeah, wait a minute. Wait. I heard part of that and I was like, wait a minute. I'm just going to skip
it. You can just throw tea leaves in a cup now, stir it up and then drink it through the straw and the straw filters out the
leaves. So you'd have to use a tea ball?
No tea ball, no coffee thing, whatever.
So you just stir up the grounds in the water and then use it. Why do you want to drink coffee through a straw?
Oh, I don't. I just have the option to.
This is like peanut butter and jelly in one jar.
I know. These are so strange purchases.
Who are these people?
I'll send you a link, Natalie. You would love it, actually.
Are we so lazy that we can't have two separate jars?
Let me show you what we... In our house, we've been debating the merits of a strap on your water bottle lately. This is my new Amazon purchase. So I'll put it on, and I'm like doing the laundry while holding my water bottle. And Clayton's like, what are you doing? And I was like, look, I don't need them. I'm holding a laundry basket, and I got my water with it. So, okay, these are the... We've gone far afield, but these are Amazon purchases.
This is why we're in collapse, folks, right here. You're witnessing the collapse right before your freaking eyes.
What would happen if I couldn't do that or... Order weird things,
Natalie,
that bring
you and
joy.
We need to collaborate so we can like do like this to Clayton, like we're attacking him on this.
Okay, Philip, ring in on the water bottle strap. No. Is it cool or is it not?
I mean, it's totally cool. I was gonna say like it's a poor segue, I know, because it's like getting back into seriousness. But actually, the major part of the Amazon shutdowns is supply chain issues because they can't get specific warehouse beams that they need to actually build the structures. So a lot of the plant warehouses that they were planning on building aren't getting built because they don't have the materials they need to actually do it. But then there are also, you know, like the other problems they have with the fact that they've already fired everybody and now they can't rehire anybody by their own practice, so they're running out of eligible employees. But sorry, that was just my...
Thank you for that.
I kind of keep up on the Amazon stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so again, he points out this catch 22, right? So that we would destroy economic growth at the same time and cause massive layoffs if we increase inflation like that. And that's what's going to happen. But don't worry, President Biden gave a speech last night and he is all over this inflation problem. And he identified the real cause of inflation in the United States. Watch.
By the way, the reason why last time out, last year, inflation was so high, you know the biggest reason? Cost of automobiles. You know why they cost so much? They didn't have the computer chips to make the automobiles.
What the hell is he talking about?
Okay, doesn't that mean that they wouldn't even have been produced, so they wouldn't have cost anything because there weren't any?
Okay.
So here's what he said. I'm going to put this up on the screen. The biggest reason, he says, inflation was so high is because of the cost of automobiles. Do you know why they cost so much? Because they didn't have the computer chips to make the automobiles.
There was noise in the background. We're like, oh, okay. All right. That explains it.
Thank you.
I don't blame you anymore.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's like listening to a child explain how the tooth fairy works. Like, you know, I mean, that's literally his explanation of it. I'd much rather listen to Zero Hedge, which the media censors on a regular basis. And today, Tyler Durden pointing this out in Zero Hedge, the U.S. economy is still being artificially supported by trillions in COVID stimulus, he says. Last week, Biden announced $1 billion in federal grants. And he says the issue of COVID remains a key problem for the U.S. economy for multiple reasons. First and foremost, the COVID stimulus package has sent our stagflationary crisis into overdrive. He said in 2020, over $6 trillion of stimulus money was created from thin air by the Federal Reserve and injected directly into the U.S. economy by Donald Trump and continued by Joe Biden through COVID relief checks, PPP loans, bailouts for numerous corporations. And again, Biden instituted the American Rescue Plan, added another $1.9 trillion to the pile. That's $8 trillion in helicopter money dropped on top of the U.S. economy. And that's exactly right. So what's going to happen is now that all of these companies don't have the stimulus money, weren't forced into hiring, they're going to have massive layoffs, and we are in it for a tailspin. That's just on the United States side. That's just on the United States side. Now to gas prices, where we've been predicting on this show that the OPEC Plus, the oil producing countries, and the oil consortium that's producing, and the plus stands for Russia, they've partnered up. And we told you last week, get ready for OPEC to cut oil production by 300,000 barrels per day. Well, now that other shoe has dropped. The first shoe has dropped. Not the other shoe. The first shoe has dropped. OPEC Plus today, slashing oil production by 100 barrels per day as prices fall. 100,000 barrels.
Yeah.
What did I say? 100?
Now, you may recall that President Biden went to Saudi Arabia recently to get OPEC to open up more oil because of the gas shortage and gas price hike. This is the opposite of that. So that trip where he said he really was going to be hard on Saudi Arabia and turn them into a, what did he say, a pariah?
Right.
Right.
Not only did he not get that
and not behave that way, right? He got the opposite of what he said he was intending, which was more gas into the economy. So
yeah, he had the fist bump, right? He had the fist bump with the Saudi crown prince, like, and he came back and the White House press secretary said, you know, his mission there, his move to Saudi Arabia was great because now oil prices are coming down, gas prices are coming down. There was no effect at all. They didn't do anything. And we knew that they were warning. Their meeting last week said that they were going to be cutting production. So because prices have slumped, they want their money. So prices are going to skyrocket. And the predictions are that we've been talking about it, 300,000 barrels per day in cuts is upcoming, which means skyrocketing oil prices once again. Of course, Western media has been trying to paint a rosy picture of all of this. You know, they've been saying that, yes, gas prices came down a little bit this summer. President Biden's approval rating has gone up as a result of it. And, you know, it's only temporary. And people who drive every day, though, I'd love to know in our chat. Let us know in the chat how much are gas prices where you are. Let us know. And petrol prices, wherever in the world you happen to be. How much are you paying for a liter or a gallon or however you measure it? Let us know. But a lot of people aren't buying it. Go ahead.
I was going to say a gallon to us just dropped to, I just paid $4.71 at the one that's down the street from me. But then I found it for $4.44, not too far away. So It's around $4.40 to $4.70 a gallon here still.
I'm in
Washington State.
Washington State, United States. Here's a news report out of Texas last night. Listen to this lady out of Texas.
We're trying to survive. You know, we're trying to take care of our families and still go to work and back. The gas going to work and back is really hurting a lot of people.
Elizabeth Baxter was heading home to Houston Sunday after visiting family in Alabama. She says while gas prices are lower than they've been, she isn't ready to call the prices at the pump cheap.
I think they just play on our psychology. They raise it up so high and then they bring it down some for everybody to think like, oh, gas is getting cheaper or whatever. And it's not, it's still not cheap. It's still ridiculous.
Trevor Reimer is in the same boat. He's still shoveling out cash while filling up his diesel truck at work.
It's about 110 to fill it every 2 days.
Oh, whoa. Goodness.
That's still around $5 a gallon.
Reimer and his wife, Kristen, had to adjust their travel plans to Disney World this summer due to the high prices.
We were considering driving to Florida, but we didn't because the gas prices were so high.
It was cheaper to fly.
Yeah, it was cheaper to fly.
Cheaper to fly.
Wow.
So, yeah, gas prices have come down a little bit. You can see that there, but, you know, just a little. But they're about to skyrocket again. So then in Europe, let's go to Europe now. Things have gotten so bad that people can't pay their energy bills. And a popular British morning show. How many people here watch this morning show in Britain? It's called This Morning on ITV. Here it is. You might know the show. Because gas prices and energy prices and paying your bills has gotten so bad in the United Kingdom that they're now spinning a wheel on their television show to give away to pay their energy bills for their viewers. Watch this crazy shit.
Okay, here we go. So we've got we'll pay your energy bills. We've got £1,000 as well. So this is energy bills, I think, for 4 months if it stops on that.
Nice.
So how are your energy bills? Are you a bit worried about it all?
Major.
Yeah.
So this is a caller that's called into the show. Okay, this is a guy that's like, they're just taking like at random, kind of like how Regis and Kelly used to do this kind of stuff. You know, like who's calling in today? Who's gonna who? Can we pay your energy bills?
Oh,
okay.
No.
I've got one of these prepayment meters, and it's absolutely murder.
Oh God!
Right. Well, let's hope it lands on one of those then.
Whatever,
right.
You're gonna win some money. So don't worry.
Here we go. Spin.
Here we go.
Let's see if this
goes.
Poor
where
bloke.
It stops, nobody knows. Da, 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 da. £1,000 or energy
down.
Bill. £1,000 or energy bill.
This is.
It is going to.
This is dystopian, isn't
be,
it? Are we going to be able to pay this guy's energy bills?
Your energy bill! Yay!
Oh my God, thank you.
We are paying your energy bill for 4 months.
That
oh,
is
fantastic.
Crazy that it's on. Like,
honey, no worries.
Oh,
go turn the TV
relief.
And everything thank back on.
Oh, listen, well done you. That's
brilliant. Well done you. That's brilliant.
It's like,
now
I don't want a car.
Watch the TV
I don't
again,
want a vacation.
Can,
great, we're going to
see. I want to reframe this. I want like the Biden speech lights, like the red with the dark blacks and stuff like that. And I don't remember what the guy's name was, but we'll just say, you know, common British name, Dale. And so Dale's on there and he's like, I'm not sure if I can pay my energy for the next 4 months. They're like, ooh, is Dale going to freeze to death this winter? Let's spin the wheel and find out.
Right.
You know, like the dark music, and that's basically what they're doing. They're just making light of it.
They should have had, instead of £1,000 and £3,000 and energy bills, they should have had one block that was just, we're going to give you a warm blanket. Like, sorry, we know you can't afford your energy bills. We're just going to send you a blanket. Like, this is what it's come to. Some producers here, I want you to give, you know, I worked in television for so many years. There were producers in a meeting the day before or the week before, because energy prices have gotten so bad. Hey, we've got an idea in our morning meeting. How about on tomorrow's show, we get a wheel and we have some people call into the show and get some poor saps that we can, you know, send them and pay their energy. Like, someone thought of this idea, thought it was a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind helping people, but it's like exploitation of people. Like, that's what it is. Like, you're really helping one person.
Well, also, think what his neighbors are going to think. Like, hey, I was just on TV and got my energy bills paid, and those people are still suffering right next door. It's like,
yeah.
They're like, can we plug in a space heater and run it across
exactly.
the street?
Yeah.
They're like, oh,
well, extension
not,
cords out of
they're like, oh, I'm sorry. I was at work while you were at home watching This Morning on ITV. So you got to sit at home and watch your television and your morning show. I mean, anyway, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole. But so
this reminds me of like, this real quick. This reminds me of the, you'll see it all the time. Like, they'll do these feel good stories. Like, an 8-year-old sold like homemade bracelets to pay off the student like lunch debt of all of his classmates. And people are like, oh, that's so great. And I'm like, what in the hell is an 8-year-old having to do labor to pay for student like their lunches? Like, that is not a feel good story. That is as dystopian as it gets.
Well, it's like it's like the woman that got up and told George W. Bush that she has to work 3 jobs, and George W. Bush says, see. That's America, like truly American right there, that you have to work 3 jobs just to get by. So Liz Truss is the new Prime Minister of England, accepting a job today, officially shaking the hands of the Queen. She's going to cap your energy bills. That's the plan in the UK. This was a big campaign promise. Truss, who refused to spell out her energy plans on the campaign trail to succeed, now plans to cap energy bills at a cost to taxpayers of as much as £100 billion. So here's the plan. Liz Truss is expected to announce plans to freeze energy bills at about £2,500 a year, but will not claw back the cost through customers' future bills, leaving the taxpayer to pick it up instead. The £400 universal handout will be given out to households this autumn. It's expected to be factored in, so the energy price cap would effectively be maintained at the £1,900 rate right now. It'll cost £90 billion, and it'll be paid for by borrowing extra money. All so that they can continue to send billions of dollars to Ukraine. Here's what Liz Truss is all about. Here's Michael Tracy's take on this, the incoming prime minister. He says this. He says, days after invasion, wildly urged Britons to go fight in Ukraine, is what Liz Truss did. Demands maximalist war aims, opposes negotiations, calls for global NATO, frustrated by Washington's unwillingness to take a hard line on Russia. So, that's what she's doing. And then there's the natural gas that comes from Russia. And if you didn't have these sanctions, you wouldn't have had this problem. So natural gas prices today jumped on Monday, jumped 30%. after Russia turned off the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. They also, if you didn't know about this, turned off the Turk Stream pipeline. Now, here's what they did, and it's actually kind of funny. What they did was, Russia was like, you know, well, we have to keep taking this Nord Stream 1 pipeline down for maintenance. And the problem is that we need to get the parts from a German company called Siemens. Now, in Germany, that's part of the sanctions. So we can't get those parts because of the sanctions on this German company. This is literally what they did. They're like, so unless we can't keep doing this maintenance dance on the Nord Stream 1 pipeline and getting these parts from Germany. So until you end the sanctions, we're just going to keep the pipeline turned off.
Okay.
And they, by the way, they said, we're also shutting down the Turk Stream pipeline as well. So again, this is what happened. The gas is going to remain shut indefinitely after they have these technical issues. And they're like, we're just not going to get these parts from.
Now, how is Germany spinning that?
Well, they're calling it sort of, you know, eco-terrorism. They're saying, look, you're messing with us, right? We have a contract. You have to uphold your end of the deal because we have people here who depend on it. And Russia is saying, these are your choices, not ours.
Yeah. Right? I mean, we saw this German Siemens dance when it went, you know, when they took the turbine, whatever, they sent it to Canada. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, of course, Zelensky was like, hey, don't let this turbine come back to Germany. And it was, and there was like this carve out for this turbine. But again, there's the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that's just waiting there, waiting to be turned on. And I've said this before. I said, wait until that pipeline gets turned on. That's the end of the war. Like, that's the end of things. That's the end of sanctions. When, like, Olaf Scholz in Germany's like, we can't survive anymore. We just got to turn that puppy on.
Yeah.
You know?
Enough of this.
Yeah. Well, my favorite part of that was the part where the United States and Europe were like, you know, we're still going to buy Russian gas, but we're going to cap the price that we're going to buy it from you. Like, we're going to cap that price. So we're still going to, we're still going to take your resources, but we're going to pay you a lot less. And that's fine. And
right.
I just like the answer to that. Like, how do you do that? How do you get away? Like, that's, how do you do that? I don't walk into like a McDonald's and go, you know, I want that Big Mac and I'm going to get that Big Mac. I'm only going to give you $3 for it.
Right.
Like, I mean, the whole thing was hilarious. As we've been talking about in the show, like these carve outs for like certain little caveats here for, we're going to take your gas, but no, we're going to end it. Not yet, but we still want it. And we're going to, it's ridiculous. It's been ridiculous since the beginning of this war and since the beginning of the invasion. So,
and meanwhile, while we figure out this more sustainable form of energy, you know, just let's fight over what is the best way that we can still maintain a hegemony of government and power. Right. So we don't really want energy that people can access themselves. So let us think hard about how we keep the power while we also like muck up the power we've got.
All of this to say, as an economist just said this morning, that it's going to be a brutal winter for Europe and prices are going to be massively, massively expensive. Listen.
It's going to create a very, very significant rise in energy prices. We have to remember that there's no cheaper alternative in the European Union than Russian gas. So any other alternative, even if there is not shutdown of complete availability of gas for the winter, is going to be massively more expensive.
Yeah. And then you have Turkey's president Erdogan.
Let me ask you really quick.
Go ahead.
Really quick. Are they allowed in the UK to shut off people's utilities if they don't pay? Like they can here?
I don't know. And can they? I mean, I know in the United States, there are now state laws that forbid doing that. So I don't know at a federal level what they can do in the UK. If any of our British viewers in the chat, let us know. And let us know, David, if you flag
them
here.
I'm just curious, because if that is the case, then not paying the bills would be a great protest because they know that they won't lose their power.
Yeah.
Or their, right, or their heat.
And they're going to, you know, and again, they're going to cap it now. So they're basically, they're basically saying that our policies haven't worked. We're going to cap energy prices at this amount, and then we're going to borrow the rest. We're going to borrow it from pension plans. We're going to borrow it from government bonds, and that's how we're going to pay for this, which then, of course, is also then bought. All that debt is then bought by, you know, like you're in debt to China. And so it's like this ridiculous dance that you're doing in all of this. So anyway, just want to wrap this up by saying Turkey's president at the end of the day said, Erdogan said, you know what? You guys are all to blame for this. You guys are all to blame for this gas crisis. And he's not wrong about that. So that's kind of a wrap up of where we are with this economic freefall.
It could be an amazing turn of events when you see this sort of Baltic region now, which will succeed because it is not going to get involved in this.
Yeah, right? Turkey says we're fine. Like we've got gas.
Same
Serbia,
mm-hmm. right? Belarus. So we'll see how they do. Like, it's interesting to see how this happens when you don't play politics with people's lives.
Yeah. Go out and buy a new tea kettle, as Boris Johnson like to say.
All right. The chat is undecided on whether or not they can turn off utilities if you don't pay your bills in the UK. Some people saying yes, some people saying no. Overwhelmingly, people are saying yes, but I don't know how many of those people actually have contracts for utilities inside of the UK. So we'll wait for those comments to be tabulated. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about what's going on with President Trump and a big victory for him on the legal side. And we'll tell you about that. We're also going to look at Israel, and Israel has some serious explaining to do. 2 days in a row of shame on you, Israel stories. Last night, the cover-up over vaccines. Tonight, cover-up over the assassination of a journalist. We'll get to that and so much more.
All right. Well, former President Trump won a major victory in his battle with the Justice Department on Monday. This pertains to the FBI raid on his home. You may recall in early August.
I recall.
Do you?
I recall.
It was kind of a big day. Dragged him back into the headlines, right?
Yeah, August 6th. Was it August 6th?
It was August 8th.
August 8th. I remember where I was on August 8th.
It was 8th. The 8th Lionsgate portal, and boy, was it. Okay. The president's legal team was seeking a special investigator, you may remember, to act as a neutral party between the Justice Department and the president. So what he wanted was for a third party, a neutral party, to review the documents before the Justice Department can. And this request was granted by a judge in Florida. Now, last week, we went over the Justice Department's opposition to this idea. They released a 26-page brief saying, a motion saying, do not give him a special counsel. He should not get this, right? We gave him plenty of chances to give us these documents. And they further argued that anything they kind of scooped up in the meantime was relevant. So when we went and like scooped off stuff on the desk and, oh, inside of there was classified documents, that's relevant because it showed the sort of bric-a-brac that he had kept around classified documents.
Like,
right?
We went into Barron's bedroom, which we learned later, right? We just learned this week that he tweeted this. He went into Barron's bedroom, like, and rifled through his stuff. It's like, so I guess if there is anything in there, like Barron's homework, maybe in his grammar homework, his mathematics homework, we just took
paper,
it all.
Larry?
Yeah.
What was his name?
It brings to mind the story that is in the book of, oh, what's the guy who was a former prosecutor? We both read his book.
Oh, Parit Bharara?
Parit Bharara wrote a book about how he was running one branch of the Justice Department in New York, and there was a bomb had gone off in Spain, right? And they thought that it may be connected to this guy who was in Oregon. And so he was fighting with the jurist for jurisdiction because he was in New York and the prosecutors in Oregon really wanted this case because they thought it would be so high profile. So they raided this guy's home and they found some communications in Spanish, only to find out it actually was their teenage son's Spanish homework. It, like, the guy was absolutely not connected at all to this Spanish bomb or the bombing or anything or the terror, nothing. I think it was a train or something like that.
Yeah.
So all this to say, like, things that get swept up absolutely, right, need a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, fine-tooth comb, right? Mm-hmm. So that's true for this guy whose kid just happened to be doing Spanish homework.
Right.
Same can be said for President Trump, right? So constitutional attorney Mark Smith said that the Department of Justice was sloppy in this case, and that is reflected on the court order by the judge. We're going to see whether or not we agree with him. Listen to what he has to say.
This is a huge victory for President Trump because the Department of Justice said they did not want a special master appointed because it was not needed. And why wasn't it needed, according to the Department of Justice? It's because the Department of Justice could be trusted to, you know, filter through the relevant information. Anything that should not be turned over to the investigative team would be set aside. But here you have an independent federal judge saying, I hear what you're saying, Department of Justice, but I'm not going to agree with you here. We need an independent third party that has no connection to the Department of Justice to make this determination. The other interesting thing, if you look at the court order, is apparently some of the documents that were supposed to have been filtered out already were exposed improperly to the investigative team. And the judge says, in light of that, I simply cannot trust the Department of Justice to do the job itself, and we need an independent person in here. So again, it is a blow to the Department of Justice. As to how long it will be a blow to the DOJ's and their investigation, hard to say, but for the moment, it's a win for Donald Trump.
MB from MB in our chat says, teacher, Barron, where's your homework? Barron, the FBI took it. That is a much better than the dog ate my homework
what
excuse.
Are you gonna say to that?
The FBI took my homework.
Didn't you read the news?
It reminds me so much of Burn After Reading. You ever see that?
Like, no, I've always wanted to see that. No, I've I've always wanted to see that. I love
it. It's so good, but there's a very similar kind of plot line to that, where it's just a, I don't want to give away too much, but it's an FBI agent that writes a nonfiction sort of like novel kind of thing, if I'm remembering it correctly. And somebody thinks it's a top secret document, and so they're trying to sell it to like the Russians and stuff like that. It's just really good. Like
And it's just somebody's homework. It's really nothing else than that.
Well, the opinion I think is worth thinking about for a second, because the Justice Department was arguing a couple of things that they really didn't want. They didn't think that they needed a special master to parse out these documents, right? For a couple of reasons. One, they thought anything that was classified attorney client privilege, we took care of that. Don't worry about it. We took it out. We had filters who looked at it, and then we didn't look at it. So, okay, that is asking us to put a lot of trust in them that they did this properly, right? Because there are obviously rules that they are bound by in their, you know, by the Bar Association, by laws, right? So, but do we trust them given that they are, you know, okay, that is a big question. That's a big if, right? They also did not want him to be able to argue anything about executive privilege. This means that Trump could claim that he had any presidential authority to shield certain conversations with his aides. So because it specifically was mentioned that they took memos, mm-hmm. communications, right? And so if he's saying, hey, I had executive privilege to talk to my staff and some of these things are mine, and they're saying, no, you were talking about classified information, it's not yours, it's property of the government. Well, this conceivably could take out even more. They had already admitted to having over 500 pages of attorney-client privileged documents. So now, most likely, some third party investigator is going to say, we think more of these apply. And then how many now can they apply to executive privilege, and what will they be left with, right?
Well, what they're left with now, of course, is a big pause on this, right? So now, like, this is going to be handed over to the special master. They're not going to be able to move forward on this for a while. And the way that the wheels of justice move very, very slowly.
Well, but they are saying that they want submissions of names by September 9th. They continue to say that they want it to move faster because, as Preet Bharara said in the book we just mentioned, your case weakens over time, right? So if you're the Justice Department, you want things to happen fast. But they did get an injunction. So they have these documents in their government offices. They are absolutely not supposed to touch them. They cannot, right? Do we, again, another important question, do we trust them to not be going through it? Because we know from the Wiseman book, from the Mueller investigation, that because they knew that they were always under threat of being shut down by President Trump, because he threatened it all the time on the news, in his speeches on Twitter, right? So that made them do things faster while they still could. So you have to believe that the Justice Department has been furiously rifling through what they could until this, in case this injunction happened, which it did. So do we trust that they haven't already been through it, right? But now they have to stop where they're supposed to. The ruling is surprisingly very protective around President Trump. For instance, it mentions like he needs this to be slow and methodical and get it right, because even if there is an indictment, that could irreparably damage him. Even if it's a wrong indictment, right, he would be that the public perception of an indictment is such that it is like a stain that doesn't come off of you, and it could irreparably damage his ability to .. Right. I mean, and for that guy, right, we know the sky's the limit. He could run again for president. He could fundraise on whatever. He could do all of these things. So the judge is protecting him in this instance. So all of this is surprising. And now we get to play the game of who's this going to be? Like,
who's the special master?
Right. Who is this special investigator going to be? Because both sides have to submit a list of names, and then we'll see basically if any of them overlap. They're not going to.
Who are you going to find that's going to want to do this?
Rudy Giuliani.
Well, he's going to be unbiased in one way or another.
Bob Barr.
Yeah, Bill Barr. Right.
Oh, Bill Barr, yeah. No, Bob is brother.
Bill Burr, he would be good.
Bill Burr. Get Bill Burr to do Bill Burr. Yeah, get Bill Burr.
Mr. Bean. Oh, yes, Philip.
I'll look through some documents. I'll look through some classified documents. I'll be your special master. Yeah, I don't know.
So
I
mean, a lot of big things in here. I do feel like this is sort of appropriate justice happening slowly, right? I do think that it's appropriate to get a special master in this,
yeah,
because there's no real reason not to be extra careful
for something that
has such big consequences for everybody.
When you have President Biden approving this, approving, like putting his name basically on the approval of his Justice Department to go after a former president, like how can you not have a third party that's impartial look at this?
Right.
I mean,
well, and imagine if it was the other way around, just like what would be going on? Like,
oh my God,
it would
yeah
be a completely different situation
well,
if it was the other way around.
But we don't have to imagine, right? Because we did see the Justice Department investigate classified documents in the personal hands of Hillary Clinton. And we did see what they did, right? So this is, it's not exactly apples to apples, but it's, they're breeds of apples, right?
Yeah, I mean, was there like a huge raid what's her house? What was her house name in Chappaqua? I want to say Chappaquiddick, but that would be a Freudian slip. Like up in Chappaqua,
wasn't a president pushing it though, is what I'm saying.
Right. I guess my point, well, yeah, you're right about that. Like a president actually pushing it. So President Obama right would have had to have pushed it in that situation.
But given, we've talked about this, given how, you know, she should have known better. She was doing something that she had personal possession of classified documents, and so did he, right? So we can't have two different standards for just people who are powerful and people who are not. And we absolutely can't have different standards for people who are Republican and people who are Democrats. So there is no reason to not sort of take this slow, be open about it, and give all semblances of neutrality.
Yeah.
And justice.
Well, we've just recently, Hillary Clinton just recently tweeted that that it was found that she didn't have classified documents in those emails. They were just emails. So that it was like state owned because she was the Secretary of State. So it's like the government owned it and it needed to be archived. And that I mean, that's what she kind of recently claimed in a tweet, was that she didn't have classified documents.
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
Right. I'd say the same thing. I don't have any classified documents. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And by the way, the server's gone anyway. We deleted all the emails. So, you know, what are you going to do now? We don't have that server anymore. We got rid of the server.
I don't think that that's accurate. She was having classified conversations. That's another rabbit hole. But again, I think it will be interesting because a couple of questions here still remain. Like, was he keeping this set of information for a reason? Was he doing it deliberately, right? The documents that were found and taken, do they prove something that he's been trying to prove to us? Right. Are they privileged because they are his communication? Right. Is it more than just, as one fellow YouTuber was saying, boxes of garbage? Or is it really things that he felt like the government would hide from the people? Right. Or was it just as the government set in his motion, sort of like sloppily collected? Right. So many questions. And it does feel as though we will get an answer. Although I'm not sure how much of it will be for us to be able to read. So that's
all right.
That.
All right. Well, we've got more news to get to today on the show. We're going to talk about the Israeli cover-up of the assassination of a journalist coming up in just moments. And we're also going to look at the latest on Syria and the United States' involvement there as we continue to steal oil and, you know, carry out missile strikes and attacks in Syria. So much more news to get to. But first, I want to tell you how you can get 13 free stocks valued up to $32,000 just by opening a free trading account right now with our friends over at Moomoo. Now, the economy is kind of wacky and the markets are kind of wacky, but wouldn't it be great to just open a free account now and get 13 free stocks? You don't have to do anything else other than make your initial deposit. I think I started my account with $100. You're not spending the money. It's sitting in, it's like a savings account because you're not doing anything with it unless you decide to start trading. So you get your 13 free stocks. They kind of spin a wheel on what kind of stocks you'll get. You could get an Apple stock, other stocks in there, valued up to $32,000 total. And then you can just let it ride for a while. Watch this economy turn around. Watch the stock market go up, whatever. But you've got these free stocks. And while you're in there, you can learn how to paper trade. You can learn because they've got a university section. So you can actually study and learn how these markets work. If you want to invest in certain commodities like copper and gold and other places like that, you can do some smart trading and learn inside there while you're waiting for this economy to kind of turn around. I was buying some different stocks today, specifically uranium stocks and also some different producers in different commodities. So again, because I know the demand for minerals is off the charts right now. So again, all of that you can do right inside of Moomoo. So here's, you have to use this URL. Go to redacted.inc/Moomoo to download the app and get 13 free stocks. You have to use that URL in order to get the free stocks. But that way you know, they know you came from us. You can use it on iOS, Android, Windows, Mac. It doesn't matter. So go check them out. They are a NASDAQ company with millions, 18 million users of their platform. And that is my favorite trading platform. So go check them out. redacted.inc/Moomoo. So, and thanks to all of you for subscribing to the channel. If you're new here, we do this show live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time, covering the stories that you won't likely see in the mainstream media largely. And we just try to seek the truth together on this show, cutting through the mainstream media bullshit to give you the honest.
Speaking of bullshit, someone in the chat just said that I was apologizing for Hillary Clinton just then. Did I?
No, you did the opposite. Because Philip mentioned,
I thought that I was saying
Philip,
what she did was unacceptable.
Hold on. Philip just said Hillary Clinton had said that she didn't have any classified emails. You said, I don't agree with that. I think she actually did have classified emails. So just to set the record straight on that.
Yeah. So don't talk bullshit to me.
Oh, I didn't realize Natalie was such a like a leftist commie. How could you even argue that point?
Right. Okay. You want to go another round? Whoever just said that to me.
Why are you defending Hillary Clinton?
Did
Rainbow
I?
Rainbow powers no. Activate.
I know.
Beam energy engaged.
Yes.
She did not.
It's the woke watch speaking, you guys, not me.
For the 10,000 people that joined us late, no, Natalie simply likes rainbows. It has nothing to do with a woke cause. Anyway, it's like people are like, well, I used to like her until I saw that rainbow bracelet. I'm like, when did a freaking political movement take over rainbows? Like, I look outside and I see a rainbow and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
That's a political symbol up in my face.
My right.
My underwear has leprechauns and rainbows on it.
Okay.
Yeah, what happened?
Pots of gold, so
yeah, what
I'm
happened
like
to
a gold hoarding libertarian rainbow wearer.
Okay. That trope again. All right. So again, one more time, because we see this comment once per video. It's not a woke watch. It's just an accessory. I really like rainbows.
And our five-year-old loves rainbows. And so everything she draws could be like a cow, and there's always a rainbow picture in it. So can we take back rainbows for just being rainbows instead of some woke political cause, please?
Sure. I mean, I think if the gay rights movement wants to use rainbows, I'm fine with that too. Use it. Choose a symbol that gives you any kind of peace or whatever. But I think leave that symbol for other people to use it too, right?
Like, yeah.
I think that's fine. I do support the gay rights movement, but I'm not trying to put anything in your face. I just want to wear it. I have no subtle political statements. I have only...
Jenny Lee says, I love rainbows.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
What's the opposite of subtle? I have only unsubtle political statements. That's why I am sitting here.
In your
to
face.
To be unsubtle. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Explicit, overt.
Overt, yeah.
Why would I sit here and talk all this shit and then make subtle innuendos about my politics? Why would I do that?
I have a watch that charges with solar power, and I'm not a tree hugger.
Okay. All right. Enough about the watch. Let's talk about Israel. I do like your watch, though. So thank you for sharing. Do you have anything for show and tell today, honey? I already showed my water bottle strap.
No, I mean, I just have my Black Lives Matter underwear on.
Okay.
I
don't want to see that. But maybe on your OnlyFans.
I don't have any of that.
Lately,
on that. Oh, my OnlyFans account. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's talk Israel.
Later, huh?
Yeah. Let's talk about Israel. More hypocrisy out of Israel. Yesterday, we covered the crazy vaccine cover-up in Israel. And now the cover-up of an assassination of a journalist.
Well, Israel is now admitting that they may have had some part in the killing of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. Now, she was an American citizen.
Some part in it.
It's a very vague mea culpa.
So someone dies by my bullet. We may have had a part in that.
We may have done it, but there's a lot of... They were left a lot of room for ambiguity, even though they do not tend to circle back around. So you may recall...
Those may have been U.S. bullets.
Okay. America and bullet does play into this story, so listen closely. Okay, so she was an American citizen who reported on the conflict in Palestine for Al Jazeera. Israel was pressured into carrying out this investigation after initially saying, we don't really feel like we need to do this, right? You may also recall that her funeral was stormed by Israeli forces, and it created this awful scene. These are Israeli forces as her body is actually carried, and it created riots. It was awful, and it prompted even more outrage in the international community.
Yeah, they dropped her body as a result of the attacks.
Rightly so. More people are
not
hurt.
Not rightly so.
No, I mean the outrage was rightly so. So the evidence, though, that her killing was on behalf, was done by Israeli forces, was incontrovertible. And now Israel admits it, although very sheepishly. The report says that it is not possible to determine who fired unequivocally. Okay. But they finally do admit, here's a quote, there is a high possibility that Miss Abu Akleh was accidentally hit by Israeli gunfire fired towards suspects identified as armed Palestinian gunmen during an exchange of fire in which life-threatening, widespread, and indiscriminate shots were fired toward IDF soldiers. So they're saying... It was crazy. It was crazy town. All kinds of bullets everywhere. We can't really be sure. So they still leave room for the possibility that she was killed by Palestinian gunmen. Now, we want to show you the CNN report that we showed you a few months ago that shows a lot of detail about this firing. I warn you, it's just a tiny bit long. So stay with us for about 3 or 4 minutes. I want you to see the details because it's important for us to break it down. And then we can look again at Israel's statement.
A moment of casual chatter. Then the shots start. This is the last moment we see Shireen Abu Akleh walking with colleagues, seemingly at ease. Seconds later, she's lying motionless on the ground.
I just watch her, and there is no up and down. She didn't breathe, and this is make me crazy. Why she didn't breathe? And the shooting is I still hearing.
Shada Hanesha has become a key eyewitness to the May 11th shooting of Abu Akleh. She and 8 others present told CNN it was the Israel Defense Forces that shot her, and that they thought it was deliberate.
But I think they. Or they want to kill us. This is why they shoot. I don't have another reason why they shoot. And they know that we are journalists.
It felt targeted.
Yeah, because all the time when I tried to touch her body, that they're shooting on me or around me.
The gunfire you hear at the beginning of this clip is key. Eyewitness testimony and audio analysis show these are the shots that kill Abu Akleh. There is a crack, and then a pop. The time between these two sounds reveals how far away the gunmen are. This indicates a distance of between 177 and 197 meters, according to forensic audio analyst Rob Mayer. The tree next to where Abu Akleh was shot is also a crucial piece of evidence. This is her colleague Mujahid Asadi, another eyewitness retracing his steps days later. The bullet holes on the tree now identified with tape. Military analyst Chris Cobb-Smith told CNN that the nature of the strike marks proved this wasn't a random shot. She was targeted. He said there was no chance that random firing would result in the three or four shots hitting in such a tight group from a distance of 200 meters.
Okay, we can stop it here. Those were the main details that I wanted you to see, right? So we could see for ourselves that it was not just sort of willy-nilly firing everywhere, right? She was walking casually with a friend side by side. You don't do that if you're amidst heavy fire, right? So what Israel is saying here is not true. Now, about the bullet that actually struck her in the head, this is interesting because the Palestinian authorities really did not want to send this bullet to Israel, even though Israel, they said, we can identify that it was from an Israeli gun. Israel said, let us see for ourselves then. And they said, we don't trust you to actually, you know, verify this authentically. That turned out to be a valid concern because when they, so take a look at what the Israeli report says about this bullet. And then we're going to talk about how they actually got their hands on it. So the IDF report released yesterday said, after repeated requests, the bullet was transferred for examination from the Palestinian authorities. Doesn't say to who. It says it was transferred. On July 2nd, a ballistic examination of the bullet was held in a forensic laboratory by Israeli experts in the presence of professional representatives from the U.S. Security Coordinator for Israel and the Palestinian authorities. The ballistic examination determined that in light of the poor physical state of the bullet, identifying the source from it, which it was fired, is difficult. Therefore, it was not possible to determine from this investigation whether or not the bullet was from an Israeli rifle. But who, again, reviewed that bullet? Well, the New York Times reported in July this. This is from a Palestinian attorney. He said, we're confident and certain of our investigations and the results we have reached around this bullet. And then they specified that the bullet had been handed over to a team of American ballistic specialists, not to the Israeli authorities. But Israel said that they did. So Israel's report is saying that it was given to U.S. Security Council Coordinator for Israel. Investigation comes from America, right? From Americans?
And they can be trusted.
Okay.
We're going to, you know, the United States sends tens of billions of dollars to Israel every year, right?
Yes.
The alliance is, you know, stronger than steel, right? And most of the, you know, like all of the media coverage of Israel is always fawning, right? The propaganda is so thick you can cut it with a knife. Once you actually start diving into it and use your brain, you actually begin to see the real deep problems here. So you're going to give it to the United States to do the analysis because they can be trusted.
Yeah, it's very strange. Now, her family is actually calling on the United States because she was a citizen to get a real investigation. They're saying, well, we're disappointed about this investigation, but we're not surprised, right? Here's what her family statement said. Since Shireen was killed, our family has called for a thorough, independent, and credible U.S. investigation that led to accountability, which is the bare minimum the U.S. government should do for one of their own citizens. We continue to call on the many members of Congress, civil society organizations, journalists, and the public to keep the pressure on President Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken to follow through with meaningful action. But they're asking the United States, and the United States already has its fingerprints on this investigation and has shown they're not really interested in doing this, right? Even the Department of State and the president have all said, yeah, sad that happened, probably was just an accident, right? No condemnation, because there's no war there in it for them.
Yeah, but just an accident.
You got to understand, there would be no condemnation even if they did figure out where it came from. If they're like, oh, yep, it was from this rifle. Don't do it again.
Yeah.
Like, what are they going to do?
Yeah, Anthony Blinken calls for an investigation. They kind of ignore it, but he's just doing that because he knows he has to, because he's getting heat from, from some people in America. But for the most part, no, they're going to look the other way. They don't care. Are they, you would literally have questions. And today, Israel this afternoon, once again, bombing the airport in Aleppo, like just continue bombing. There's no media outcry about this, like literally attacking.
But had that shooting been the other way around, there would have been a massive investigation.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. There would have been continued bombing and it would have been justified airstrikes. I mean, this is the thing you do, right? Mm-hmm. This is the propaganda. This is what they've been doing. Same thing they do in Syria, what U.S. forces do in Syria, right? It's retroactively, then it sort of forces you to retroactively justify bombings and killings. And, where was the international outrage, by the way, of a few weeks ago when the, 13 kids were killed in the air, in the attacks in Gaza?
Mm-hmm.
Like, finally, they acknowledged, the Israeli authorities came out and finally acknowledged that, it was a bunch of kids we ended up killing. But initially we didn't say that and we didn't report it. And they hide it and they cover it up. This is what these governments do. This sailing prepper Dark Secret says, that journalist was murdered and the U.S. doesn't care. Shame on the United States.
And I do wonder, is there some kind of racial element here? Is it because she's Middle Eastern? Is it because she was killed in a conflict that most Americans think, it's crazy there. That's what happens.
She was an Al Jazeera reporter.
We don't have to care about this, right? Would it be different if it was, say, a more a white journalist in Ukraine? Like the things that, where there are more highlighting, more spotlights.
Of course,
on those
I think
things,
you answered
right?
your own question. Yeah,
yeah. I want to say it in a sensitive way.
A white official, because we know Eva Bartlett is on a hit list over there. So it kind of depends on the journalist as well, not just the color, like
sure.
their viewpoint.
Yes, on the viewpoint of what we want.
Right.
I look at it like, is there anything that the U.S. government wants or needs from them? More wants from them. And if they don't want anything from them, if they don't have enough money, if they don't have enough influence politically, then there's really not going to be much interest in pursuing anything like Jamal Khashoggi. It's like there's nothing the U.S. government needed from him. So U.S. citizen doesn't matter. We don't really care.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then President Biden can go to Saudi Arabia and I really, behind closed doors without any cameras, I really pushed the Saudi crown prince on that killing of the Jamal Khashoggi, the Washington Post reporter. Like, I pushed him on that, but I was really here to make oil deals. So it's too bad that a Washington Post reporter went into a hotel and didn't come out alive. That's the price you pay so we can get some cheap oil. Mm. Well, we've got more news to get to here in a second. We're going to talk about Syria. Speaking of which, some big updates in Syria and the United States involvement there. And we're going to take your super chats in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about our community. We've got a community at Redacted. So if you support independent journalism, it's what we do here. We're not bought and sold by any big media corporation, by any billionaires telling us what to say. We have no Bill Gates telling us what to say or do around here. So we get to cover the stories that we think are important, and we go wherever the facts will take us on these stories. So if you want to support us, you can. You can just go over to redacted.inc, and for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can become a channel supporter. Again, we post things to our group first, new videos, new releases. We've got our Redacted Conversations videos that go out to our supporters first before we make them public. We also have members-only content that no one else gets to see over there. So if you go to redacted.inc, you can become a channel member. And you can also sign up for our newsletter at the same URL. If you go to redacted.inc, it's not .com. It's, let me just show you real quick, because I was meant to show you on my page here, and I did not do that. So just give me one second. That's why we got to get a video made, because I like me typing this in.
I'll make
doing
one tomorrow.
This. Like something nice here. Okay, so if you go to redacted.inc, this is the website. There we go. And just click on become a VIP member today. And for the price of a cup of coffee, you can support what we do. There you go. Chris Cannon in our chat says, I hate the 30-minute wait when that notification goes off. Thank you, Chris. Well, we appreciate that. And we appreciate you being here with us every night. Thank you so much. All right, we've got more news to get to. And I do want to talk about what's going on in Syria. So something big just happened in Syria, a country which I think is incredibly important for a number of reasons and really important to cover here on this show. But the mainstream media totally ignores the story. They totally ignore what happened this weekend because they were too busy watching this crap. Watch.
Extreme MAGA Republicans. MAGA Republicans, extreme MAGA ideology. MAGA Republicans. MAGA Republicans.
Yeah, wall-to-wall coverage of that instead of actual stories that really matter to people. Before we get into what happened in Syria, let me ask you a simple question. We'll put this up here in the chat and see how many of you can actually answer this question. Does the United States have any military outposts in Syria? Yes or no? Just a thought experiment. I'm just going to take a sip of water.
Get a little bit of water.
Just getting a little bit of water. You guys answer yes, no, B. Let us know in the chat here.
B.
Yes or no. No, that it was a yes or no question. There was no B in it. There was no A or B. Okay, so a lot of people saying yes. A lot of people saying yes. You can say in the chat, what do you guys think? Yes. Overwhelmingly yes so far. Okay, if you answered yes,
you get a gold star.
You are correct. You got the first part of our thought experiment done. The next question here, let's put this next question up on the screen. Now we have a screen for you. How many illegal military bases does the U.S. have in Syria? Here's the question. How many illegal military, and I say illegal because the government absolutely does not want us there. So we have no right to be in Syria. How many illegal military bases does the United States have in Syria? Is it A, 1, B, 2, C, 7, or D, 28 military bases? What do you guys think? How many in the chat? You guys just weigh in. Give us your thoughts. I'm watching it.
No, in the D. U.S. military, my guess is 28. I don't know, but that's my guess.
28, 20. A lot of people saying D. A lot of people saying 7. Okay. The correct answer, if you guessed 28, you are correct. According to the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, there are 28 U.S. bases or outposts that are currently deployed with U.S. forces in Syria. Now, the U.S. doesn't like to admit any of this, and they only kind of basically say that they've got two military bases there, right? So there's kind of a discrepancy. We have actually separate reporting from multiple news agencies talking in the dozens of military bases are out. So here's my thought. If you have forces in another country, and even if it's a little shed, that's an outpost. If you've got military U.S. soldiers at a little house, a little shed, a big warehouse, a big building, it doesn't really matter. You're in their country illegally. So it really doesn't matter what you want to call it, right? So according to Syrian president Bashar al-Assad, 28 U.S. bases or outposts.
Jeez.
And U.S. soldiers currently deployed there. They don't mention it or admit it or not, and it doesn't matter. They're illegal. Now the U.S. this week quietly announced another building. They're building a brand new, what they are saying is their third big military base. Now, okay, third, right? 28, 3, somewhere in between is the truth, right? Nevertheless, here's how the Syria news report put it. The U.S. forces, this is a Chinese news report, established a third military base in Syria's northeastern province of Hazaka on Saturday, in a war monitor reported. The new military base was set up in the village of Nakara, 3 kilometers southwest of the city of Kamishli in the Hasaka province, and the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said. All three U.S. bases in this area are located in areas controlled by the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, the Britain-based watchdog said. The U.S. forces have established multiple military bases in Syria since entering the war-torn country in 2014, with its largest one in the Al-Omar oil field in the eastern province. The Syrian government has repeatedly urged the withdrawal of U.S. forces from the country, referring to them as occupation forces that entered Syria without its consent. So why the hell are we there?
So weird. Why would you build a base next to oil? Like, that would have to stink, wouldn't it?
I know. You'd be like, why would you go near like a diamond mine? Why would you go near uranium fields? Yeah. Would you go near oil?
Makes no sense.
All this extra oil, it really makes no sense. Unless you wanted to steal it. So what the United States, why are we there? Anyone answer this question in the chat? Let me know. Why are we there? That's the great question, right? Do you want the real answer? Or do you want the one that the United States tells the rest of the world? Because what the United States tells the rest of the world is that they are in Syria to fight ISIS and to fight Al-Qaeda. That's what they tell us. And to protect, they say they're guarding the Syrian oil fields.
I'm just going to hold that for you.
Yeah, I'm going to hold that for you. You got $100? I'll hold that for you. Right, from themselves.
From us?
Well, as Kavork Almasian says, friend of the show and journalist, Syrian journalist, he says, yeah, protect it from us? Like, it's our oil. We can take care of it. Thank you. We don't need you to invade our country and protect our oil. Get the hell out. So that's what they tell us. But the truth, of course, is that the United States uses ISIS, uses Al-Qaeda. We detailed all of the uses of Al-Qaeda in another video. I'd encourage you all to go check that out. We won't go through it here. As weapons pour across the border, they're funneling and supporting Al-Qaeda. And the United States knows that, and they're doing it on purpose. And they're using and they're supplying massive amounts of weapons to Al-Qaeda and to Syria to carry out attacks against the government of Bashar al-Assad. They've been doing it for years now, right? We steal their oil, and we pretend that we are simply guarding it. Here are hidden cameras that caught Americans with a convoy of semi-trucks stealing Syrian oil. Look at all of these semi-trucks, or these tanker trucks, filled with oil, Syrian oil, leaving the oil fields. And where were they going? Into Iraq. Into Iraq for use by American forces or sell or being
sold off. Probably Halliburton trucks, too.
Yeah, who knows? But, you know, being sold off. This is Syrian oil that we just stole. That's the United States. But the U.S. also concocts widely discredited stories about the Assad regime. I didn't mean to say regime. That's Assad government. Like that, like literally, like propaganda even pops in your head sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's Bashar al-Assad is the president of Syria.
He's the leader.
It's not a regime, right? Like, so
it's
that's
an
my
administration.
Mistake. Yeah, the administration, right? But they call it the Assad regime. And it's amazing how pervasive like propaganda can be, right? Where sometimes it just like slips out in natural conversation by accident on my part to even slip out like that. So my mistake. But anyway, it also concocts widely discredited stories about Bashar al-Assad and using chemical weapons against his own people. Of course, that has been widely discredited. That's been proven 100% false by the OPCW. An excellent journalist, by the way, who were there on the ground, who covered this story, like Eva Bartlett, friend of the show, Vanessa Bealey, and others, and Aaron Mate, who's been on this story from the very beginning in Douma, the alleged chemical gas attacks. We'll get to that in a second. That didn't stop, though, the United States of America from lying directly to our faces about this Syrian gas attack. Watch.
Now we want to get you to the State Department, where moments ago, a spokesperson, Heather Nauert, said the U.S. has proof that Syria was behind the chemical attack on civilians. Let's listen to that.
Sharing information, intelligence included, and we can say that the Syrian government was behind this attack. We talked about this the other day. The White House has addressed this as well.
Yeah.
Is that a recent video?
No, she's been gone for the State Department. She was there during the Trump administration.
No, so this was after the gas attack. This is the alleged gas attack that didn't actually happen, right? So this was we're at the State Department. We've got this breaking news. We've got this information. We want to get out here at the podium and tell you that we have proof, says the State Department. The reason she didn't have any proof, though, to share, it was all a lie. That's why it was all a lie. They used that lie to justify attacks against the Assad government and killing civilians. They used that lie to set up military bases, and now they're doing it again with a third military base because, God, we don't want Bashar al-Assad to gas his own people again, so we need a third military base while we protect your oil. It's such a sham. And so few Americans would actually read the information. Just go to the gray zone. Read Aaron Mate's reporting on this. Just dive into the OPCW report. It's all there. Like, you can do it. I love something Caitlin Johnstone said yesterday on the internet. She said, She goes, don't bring your ignorance to me anymore. We have an internet within seconds, you can literally find anything. You can find accurate data, find the proof in these stories. Don't bring your ignorance to me anymore.
You used to be able to do it a lot more. It's getting harder to find real information, factual information, because Google is suppressing a lot of that now.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying just Google. First of all, like we said yesterday, like World Economic Forum cover up of what we were doing on the show yesterday. If you Googled information about the World Economic Forum in Chile, any bad results, you couldn't find it. You had to go page 3 of Google before you had all of the World Economic Forum data drowned out first, because they, I don't know what kind of cahoots they are with Google, that they're taking up the first 3 pages of Google before you can even get the accurate data about it. But it's there. Just take a little time. It's like going to a library, you know, spend the time at the library, dig through
material. Not reading, as Roger Waters would say.
Well, I mean, it's like you gotta trust your professionals in that. Like, if you want a deck built, you call a carpenter. If you want to find information, you find an actual journalist, like an independent journalist. Because mainstream media is gone. They don't seek anything out. They just take the official narrative.
Yeah.
You know, so then that's evidence enough. Well, the government said it must be true. But if you find independent journalists, they're actually digging for this information, and they're professionals at finding information.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a good source.
Yeah.
And good note keeping in this case.
And independently funded, by the way, you know?
And, you know, even just since starting research on this show and for the newsletter and such, there are many times when I read some narrative from CNN or New York Times or something, and I'm like, that's not what we were told just, you know, however many months ago. And I can go back through our notes, but the software that we use, and find links that say something different. But if I Google for it, no, I can't find it, right? So we have to independently keep our own archives, because otherwise it's as if they really think we're stupid.
I know. That's why I started building, like, here on the show and for our channel and our network here, like, I started building a news archive of our own data and our own source material.
Right.
Because, yeah, if you just do a Google search on some bullshit thing that the New York Times is telling you, you're going to get drowned out by mainstream media news results that are parroting the same bullshit that they just were.
We see it all the time. We see it right now with Dr. Fauci just last week telling us, I didn't really say lockdowns. I didn't mean it. I didn't make everyone go into lockdowns, right? Like, how's they really think that we're going to, oh, was that just a suggestion and I went along with it? Oh, that was nice of me. How compliant.
They really think we're stupid, though, because at that same press conference, you know, so here's what they do. They used that lie, right? They used that lie, that Syrian gas attack lie, to justify attacks against the Assad government. That's exactly what they did, and killing civilians. They used that lie to set up military bases in Syria. That's exactly what they did. They used Syria as a proxy staging ground for the entire Middle East. It's like the linchpin for them in the entire Middle East. And when pressed during the same press conference on this question about what evidence they had about the chemical attacks in Douma, they didn't present any evidence at all, but instead said, we have our sources. I can't provide anything for you. Watch this.
Elise, go right ahead. Sorry.
At what level of confidence are you that that Syria was responsible? I mean, there's having proof and believing that they did it, and then there's incontrovertible proof and a high level of confidence and assurance.
A very high level of confidence. Hi, Barbara.
We verified the intelligence coming.
I'm not going to be able to give you information about the intelligence that we're gathering on that.
But you've got your own. You've independently verified that there is.
The United States government has its own sources of information. We have been assessing this thoroughly since this took place on Saturday. Okay.
Yeah, what, the white hats? How discredited that has been, right? Dive into, you know, then of course the West was all up, well, the white hats are there. They have these film crews that are mysteriously behind them as they're pulling children out of this, of rubble. Oh, really? Really? When you actually dive into the story, you realize it's total garbage, total bullshit. It's been totally discredited now. Again, watch my full interview with Vanessa Beely on that piece of it. And there's a huge report on this, on the white hats that she's actually working on. Totally discredited. The reason she didn't have any proof when she was standing there at the podium is because she didn't have any proof given to her. She was a spokesperson for the State Department, right? They didn't give her any proof. And so she was having to spin and, you know, move on to the next story, next subject. And because it was all manufactured, it was all a lie. None of it was true. And the Western media ran with it. Journalist Aaron Maté testified before the United Nations about the Douma gas attack and the fake story surrounding it. What happened was stunning. The OPCW investigators went to Douma and found no evidence of a chemical attack in their initial report. But then, of course, someone got involved. Who mysteriously got involved and discredited and then fired those initial inspectors and basically rewrote the report? Here's Aaron Maté at the United Nations speaking to the different member countries about this. Watch.
It would mean that in the case of Douma, the OPCW was exploited to accuse the Syrian government of a chemical weapons attack in Douma in April 2018. It would also mean that the OPCW was used to retroactively justify the bombing of Syria by several member states just days after the alleged Douma incident. In short, it appears the OPCW was compromised to justify military strikes. There are also indications that the OPCW has retaliated against two veteran officials, one of them is here today, who were a part of the Douma investigation and challenged the censorship of the Douma evidence. These two OPCW officials are highly regarded scientists with more than 25 years of combined experience at the organization. Yet, instead of being protected and given the chance to air their concerns, these two scientists have seen their reputations impugned by the OPCW leadership. There is substantial evidence to back all of this up.
Yes. Thank you, Aaron, for his excellent reporting on this.
He has since been called a conspiracy theorist and personally attacked, right?
Oh, yeah.
For laying this out for us.
And by the way, they can't point to one. So when they level these attacks against him, they have no evidence. They don't point to any specific example. And he's called them out to their face, and they still spin and can't come up with any example because they can't, because they're total shit. By the way, I meant to say white helmets, not white hats. Sorry about that. It's white helmets, not white hats. Men without hats. But again, why is the United States in all of these war zones, killing all of these people, spending billions and billions of dollars? Jeffrey Sachs is a professor at Columbia University. He just wrote a really damning piece about the U.S. military and Western bullying and why it's going to lead to the collapse of Western society. Watch this.
This goes back a long way. I think it's useful to start 30 years ago. The Soviet Union ended, and some American leaders got it into their head that there was now what they called the unipolar world, that the U.S. was the sole superpower and we could run the show. The results have been disastrous. We have had now three decades of militarization of American foreign policy. A new database that Tufts is maintaining has just shown that there have been more than 100 military interventions by the United States since 1991.
Holy
shit. It's really unbelievable. And I have seen in my own experience over the last 30 years, working extensively in Russia, in Central Europe, in China, and in other parts of the world, how the U.S. approach is a military first and often a military only approach. We arm who we want. We call for NATO enlargement, no matter what other countries say may be harmful to their security interests. We brush aside anyone else's security interests. And when they complain, we ship more armaments to our allies in that region. We go to war when we want, where we want, whether it was Afghanistan or Iraq or the covert war against Assad in Syria, which is even today not properly understood by the American people, or the war in Libya. And we say, we're peace loving. What's wrong with Russia and China? They are so warlike. They're out to undermine the world. And we end up in terrible confrontations.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Read his West False Narrative piece. It's out now. It's a really, really damning piece about the Western. I mean, this idea that going back, you know, to 1945, you know, the Cold War, and even, you know, even later than that. But like, this is what we need to do in order to, for us to build strength. We need to arm whoever we want, undermine countries, invade countries, set up over 900 military bases around the world, 28 of them in Syria. That's how we spread democracy.
And how's that working out for you?
Yeah. Just go back to the beginning of the show.
They don't count all of the legit ones as bases, so we don't even know. Like, we say 900 bases, but that's probably way more than that if you count depots and armaments and all that other stuff.
Oh, and it's all redacted, by the way. I mean, the name of our show is for a reason. So I've been pouring through. I've been reading a lot of Jack Carr. I love Jack Carr. I don't know if you guys read any of his novels or not, but I love his stuff. The James Reese series, The Terminal List.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yes.
And anyway, he says in the book, he says he has to hand it over before he writes it. He has to give it over to the Department of Defense. And they redact huge chunks of the book. And he's like, I leave the redactions in there. So as you're reading it, you can tell me whether or not you think it's worthy of redaction or not. But it's oftentimes it's mentions of like secret CIA bases in different parts of the world that we don't know anything about.
Wait, this is fiction?
Yes, but he was a Navy SEAL.
So he submits his fiction to the real government.
He has to get it approved because he was, you know, and he knows about all these military bases. Okay. He's been there, secret ops, all of these military bases. And so all of these bases and places that he mentions in these books are redacted in Africa and all. So there's, yes, to your point, David, so many bases that we have no idea about in countries that maybe they don't even know that they are even there in their backyard. Like that's what the United States does.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right. Interesting.
Who pays for them? I can't remember. Who pays for all the secrecy? Don't we?
Yeah, I pay a little bit of it.
They're like,
we do. Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah.
Good question.
Dr. Scotty Jones says, shouldn't you be called unredacted? Well, I know. Thought about that, but redacted is.
Yeah. Well, we're punchier. Telling you what's redacted. Yeah, so exactly. I understand. Yeah. Where you're going there.
All right, let's get to some super chats before we wrap things up tonight. And don't forget to subscribe to the channel.
Okay, so we have Carolyn Walker with a super sticker. And then Sneaky Fox, the government does not lie. It engages in disinformation. Just like they do not murder, they depopulate the area. You have to look at it to the eyes of the highest bidder.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
TPS says that Wayback Machine has deleted historical articles.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The Wayback Machine's awesome.
No, but they said, he said they deleted.
They have deleted historical articles.
Yeah. Oh, they have. No, I think he means they contain deleted articles, not that they were in the process of deleting them.
Oh. Okay.
They have them.
Contains deleted historical
Contains articles. Deleted articles. Yes.
Yeah. Sailing Pepper Dark Secrets. The journalist was murdered and the U.S. doesn't care. Shame on. Oh, you already read that one. TPS. Using personal communications instead of government tools is expressly against laws requiring government records.
Okay. I think that's in relationship to Hillary Clinton, right? Thank you.
Yes. Mind of Jamal. $400 a month in gas is what I meant to say. See if there's my Ford Raptor. $400 a month here in North Carolina for gas. Wow.
That's crazy town.
Freckles, happy to hear you're actually aware of the convoy that did go into DC with no media coverage. Thank you.
Yes.
We covered it here on the show. Then, yeah.
Yeah. And then Vladimir Surma with two. CZ, and I think that's Czech and New Zealand or Netherlands, haven't been reported internally, any critical view is well non-existent, so I believe the crash is done by people who are being useful idiots, but it's those who influence them plan it. I work for European Commission. Problem is that most of the internals are care of career. This results in people who are afraid to make a mistake, so you get in top, those who only praise top guys, and they don't care about the rest.
Hmm. TPC gives us a clarification, too, that he means, no, they're deleted in the Wayback Machine. Like
It's a 404 page. Yeah.
Hmm.
Be curious what topic you're looking up that's now deleted. Did you see that they froze?
Don't say it out loud.
I won't. Yeah. Did you see they froze Liz Truss's Wikipedia page today or her LinkedIn? Yeah, it was her Wikipedia page. I think they froze it because it was getting manipulated.
Trolled.
May Brown, I'm so glad we have a news channel to come to and get the real deal with a medal.
Oh, we got a medal. Thank you very much.
We did.
K-Madge says she's trolling us with this rainbow.
I don't want to talk any more about the rainbow.
I don't either. Tom. If I have to hear about this freaking US rainbow watch.
Next person that mentioned rainbow gets put in timeout.
Damn it.
Right.
Don't you cave and get a different color.
I know. I was talking to my son about getting a new one, and he's like, you shouldn't have to do that.
When she came to me, I got it for her as like a Mother's Day gift. She's like, it'll go with so many different outfits. I love rainbows. And I was like, so then I bought it for her. And it went with the red watch, and she's had it for years
now. I'm
going
to see if I can find a rainbow band for my watch, too. So
okay,
I can
we'll be
board.
Twinsies. Okay.
Yes. Tom, the U.S. and its vassal states are determined to destroy their own economies. The U.S. can't provide clean water to its own people.
Yes.
That's something that I was going to bring up the other day. The fact that we're, you know, we're sending like 70 some billion to Ukraine, $3 billion a year to Israel, yet people can't drink water in Flint in Missouri or whatever, or Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Like that's
it's crazy,
unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. Unbelievable.
It is crazy.
Yeah, I believe I actually brought that up yesterday or the day before, I think, or maybe no, there wasn't a day before, but I remember bringing that up, like, because yeah, I thought the same thing. Like, how do we have all this money to give? But to not to us though.
Yeah, right.
Like Flint can fall apart. We're fine with that. But by God, not Ukraine.
Yeah. Drive through Philadelphia. Drive through any of the major cities and see the shithole that they've become.
Yeah.
Mark Andrzejczyk, I go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to read a super chat. Sorry. R.E. Lopez says many false flag operations by our government. Yes, indeed. Now read yours.
Mark Andrzejczyk, I unsubscribed and resubscribed only because I wanted my name flashed on your screen. Don't try this, guys. It doesn't work. And that is true. It doesn't. So
it has to be a new subscriber.
But thank you for the super chat. Uh-huh. You got your name said by us. What was the name again?
Mark Andrzejczyk. Zizak.
Okay. Zizak. Thank you, Mark.
And here's another one. RS 5-pound super chat. What would you say overall goal of the Great Reset is? Just control? Yes, it's a globalist consolidation of power away from individual governments. It's right there in their meeting notes. They want to take away personal property. They don't want you to have like the farm, so your own personal farm. They want it all consolidated and controlled. That way they can control climate change, they feel. They can reduce carbon emissions and all of the things that they think they can do. They'll tell individual countries to, hey, you, I know you've been growing soybeans for thousands of years in your country. You're not going to do that anymore because now we've decided as part of this global shift that Netherlands will grow the soybeans. You will now grow coffee. Like it's a total consolidation of power and property rights. And
well,
cash,
and also
by the way,
the,
and cashless
the pandemic.
Society.
The pandemic in the United States was the largest transfer of wealth in like human world history. Like in the history of humanity was the largest wealth transfer.
Yeah.
And it's still going on. Lolos. Can you talk about the Pact of Princeton and the strategies of the Marxists to transform Latin America into a second USSR?
You know, it's interesting. Speaking of, okay, so I did look into that because this chat was yesterday, same chat. This is also something that has very strange Google results when it, like, there's nothing really about. So, if you'd like to send me more information, please do. I am at Natalie Morris on Twitter. That's probably the best way to link things to me.
And that's all the super chats.
All right.
And that's going to do it for our show. Please subscribe. All you need to do is just hit that subscribe button and smash that like button. We are here every day. Monday through Thursday, anyway, at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us live for Redacted, covering the stories that we're trying to seek the truth together on. So that's our goal. Thank you, everybody. Have a great night, and we will see you back here tomorrow. Bye, everyone.